This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830 on Sunday, January 26th, 2025. Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. I'm Rob Jerisline, and we're going to be talking outdoor topics as they affect Minnesota and the region for the next 1 hour. A couple pretty good guests coming up a little bit later. We will have Aaron Meyer from the Minnesota Muskie and Pike Alliance join us. He was part of a session at the Minnesota DNR Roundtable a few weeks ago, talking about muskie management in the state. I wrote a story about that in this week's print edition of Outdoor News and at OutdoorNews.com. And Aaron and I will catch up on that topic a little bit. At the bottom of the hour, Kelly Ferris from the Minnesota DNR is going to join us. Kelly is involved in a public review process that's asking state citizens what they want to do with the Keystone Wildlife Management Area in Washington County. Great new piece of public land, 1,800 acres, not too far from the metro area. We will talk about that a little bit more, like I say, in about 30 minutes. As for what's been happening the past couple days, really a beautiful winter weekend in January for Minnesotans, right? We had the cold this past week that made more ice. I mean, there's a lot of ice out there. And then some warmer temperatures. Days already getting a little bit longer, too, right? We're more than a month past the solstice. Maybe even a little bit of melting down a couple holes this weekend. That they always say that oxygenated water helps activate the bite. I'm hoping that anglers indeed had some good fishing the past couple days. What's on my mind as we kick off this week's show? Well, there's a lot going on. We've got a legislative session that is underway, sort of. We've had some bill introductions. We reported that this past week. Nothing shocking, nothing real surprising. You know, I see some bills from some outstate legislators regarding issues like wetlands and how we spend some of our dedicated funds. I saw a bill from a metro legislator, one of those land transfer bills to one of the state's Ojibwe bands. And then I saw that Steve Drazkowski, who joined me on the show a year or two ago to talk about the legislation at that time that would eliminate the shotgun zone across Minnesota for deer hunting. The whole state would be accessible for hunters using rifles. That bill is back. That bill comes back every year. It usually fails. We should talk to Steve and find out if he's got a little different spin on it this year to see if perhaps it's got a better shot at passage in 2025. But we got a lot of session ahead of us, so we will circle back on some of those topics in future weeks. I saw an interesting story broke late this past week. Now, some folks might recall about a year ago, I think it was last March, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers hosted its annual rendezvous here in Minnesota at the Minneapolis Convention Center. I talked about that quite a bit at the time. And there were a lot of interesting breakout sessions during that event. And one of them involved a DNR researcher from Wisconsin who talked about a long-term study they've got cooking over there. They're calling it the Southwest Wisconsin Chronic Wasting Disease Deer and Predator Study. Well, they wrapped that up and they presented it to the State Natural Resources Board this past week. As dedicated listeners know, chronic wasting disease is absolutely rampant in a good chunk of southwest Wisconsin, so that's a real logical place to do a study like that. So quick background, the DNR over there in Wisconsin said the purpose of the study was to determine how CWD impacts deer populations. Field work for the project took place in northern Iowa, Dane, and Grant counties. That's that area just west of Madison. And they selected that area because it's the region where CWD was first found in Wisconsin back in 2002. Can't believe it's been that long. And they've had really high CWD prevalence rates there ever since. So as part of the study, the Wisconsin DNR captured more than 1,200 animals, adult deer, fawns, coyotes, and bobcats, and they placed GPS collars on all the deer. So they started this in 2016, and the Wisconsin DNR is calling it the largest and most comprehensive deer research project ever undertaken in the Badger State. So what have they found out? Well, I don't think it's a big shock, but if you were a white-tailed doe in that area, again, this is ground zero for CWD, really in North America, and you are not infected with CWD, you have an 83% chance at survival. So not a bad run. Males, bucks, 69% chance. If you're running around with antlers in central Wisconsin, pretty good chance you're going to get shot, or at least a better chance than if you're a doe. So a lower survival rate than an uninfected doe. But again, not too bad, 83% and 69% respectively. Now, if you are infected with CWD, you're a CWD-infected white-tailed deer in one of those three counties. If you're a doe, you have a 41% chance of survival, compared to 83% if you're uninfected. And if you're a buck, ooh, bad news, 17%. 17% chance of survival compared to 69% if you are uninfected. And the DNR in their press release over there offered some quick conclusions that are pretty blunt, which I appreciate. The DNR saying these figures indicate that CWD is substantially reducing the annual survival probability of both male and female white-tailed deer. Reduced female survival lowers the growth rate of the population, and when sufficiently suppressed, may result in population decline. A couple of bullet points. The DNR saying where CWD prevalence is high, deer populations are likely declining, and CWD will eventually impact deer populations elsewhere if it continues to spread and increase in prevalence. Well, that kind of brings us back to Minnesota, which WCCO Outdoors has learned is just west of Wisconsin. We've got increasing prevalence rates in western Wisconsin creeping ever closer to Minnesota, and we've got increasing prevalence rates in a number of areas in southeast Minnesota now. Several deer permit areas, I've talked about that the past month or so, are up over 5, even 6% in prevalence rate. They seem to have hit critical mass, and it's probably going to continue to increase rapidly into some of those same sort of rates that we're seeing in Wisconsin, and that's bad news. I'm seeing social media chatter saying, oh, it's not a big deal, it's not going to affect deer populations that much. Well, yes, it is. And the Wisconsin DNR just did a vast research study over the past 9 years that proves it. So I'm going to keep talking about CWD and its growing prevalence and what maybe Minnesota can do to prevent southeast Minnesota from looking like what they're dealing with over there in western Wisconsin. All right, so we're going to switch gears in our next segment. We're going to talk musky fishing, musky management. So don't go away. More WCCO Outdoors after these messages.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Rob Dreisline. You know, I forgot to mention the past couple weeks. This was the weekend that the Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers held its North Country Icebreaker up at Breezy Point on Pelican Lake. They're probably all wrapped up now as we speak, but I hope folks who attended that event had a good time, had some good camaraderie, caught some fish. Hope no one fell in any spearing holes. One of my staffers was up there, Natalie Ryder, so perhaps we'll get a report from her on that event. Natalie also had a story in this past week's Outdoor News. It was interesting. There wasn't a lot of action. There wasn't a lot of results in it. She went down to the Winona area where the DNR was working with some commercial fishermen to try to see if they could catch a bunch of Asian carp. This time of year, those fish tend to school up. They're easier to catch all at once. Perhaps you remember a story from a year ago where the DNR caught like, what, 500 or 600 of them, was the biggest catch of these invasive fish in the upper reaches of the river ever. And the DNR likes to try to find them and pull out as many as they can when they can. The winter provides an opportunity to do that, but it's challenging through the ice, go figure. They're using some new technology to try to pull that off, and they try to direct the fish toward the nets. And it seems like when you're trying to seine carp under the ice, you either really hit it big and there's literally piles and piles and piles of carp on top of the ice, or you completely miss. And they completely missed, unfortunately. It sounded like they went out a couple days and just were not able to corral these invasive carp. Maybe they'll get out again this year and or this time next year. Maybe they'll have better success. Hey, I mentioned on some recent broadcasts about the DNR roundtable that was held a couple weeks ago back on January 10th. It's now in the rearview mirror. But I sat in on a fairly interesting session during the roundtable on muskie management here in our fine state. There were a couple of DNR folks on hand, as well as my next guest, Aaron Meyer. He is one of the co-chairs with the state's Muskie and Pike Alliance, and we're happy to have him now. Aaron, thanks a lot for carving out some time for me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
First, tell us a little bit about the Muskie and Pike Alliance. A lot of folks are familiar with Muskies, Inc. What's your niche?
The Muskie and Pike Alliance is sort of an offshoot off of Muskies, Inc. from, we've been in existence now for 25 years or so. And really, if you know how Muskies, Inc. works, it's similar to other, say, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, where they're individual chapters underneath a larger organization. So they kind of operate independently. And the Muskie and Pike Alliance was built to bring all those voices together, to have one more unified voice for muskie management in Minnesota.
So I wrote a story this past week talking about this session at the roundtable, and it provided a little background for how we got to where we are with muskie management. One of the DNR people during that session talking about how there's been sport angling for muskies going back to the late 19th century, and we all remember, or at least reports of the muskie rampage on Leech Lake in 1955. Then muskie populations, they're slow growing fish. They just couldn't keep up with the pressure until we got stocking programs going, right?
Correct.
So we had the shoe pack strain for a number of, how long did that go? A couple of decades, and now we're stocking the Leech Lake strain. Those get a whole lot bigger.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell you the real numbers and specifics on the shoe pack strain. They're also a native Minnesota strain, but they're basically from Shoe Pack Lake. And as it turned out, the Leech Lake, or Mississippi strain, which was actually more widespread and native anyways, grows faster and gets bigger.
And I don't necessarily expect you to know this, but I believe is Wisconsin stocking that Mississippi strain now too?
I believe there are some cases that they are. They stock several different strains there. They have a couple different native strains. They have the Great Lake strain, but I do believe that they're using some Mississippi, Leech Lake strain in some cases to try to get bigger fish.
So, Aaron, we had a nice run with muskie fishing in the 1990s, early 2000s. It seems like we really kind of hit our stride with the Leech Lake Mississippi strain. It kind of peaked. And then what happened? I think a lot of muskie anglers like yourself feel like the quality of muskie angling in Minnesota in 2025 isn't as good as it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's definitely correct. Statewide, it's really gotten a lot tougher, to the point where, honestly, anglers are leaving the sport or just going to Canada. It's a long, kind of complicated explanation, but really, there just weren't a lot of good opportunities for anglers, across the state. Most of those native fisheries had been pretty well decimated. So the stocking program really was what brought the fishery to the public, made it accessible again. So the growth in muskie angling exploded right at the same time as the populations in all these lakes peaked. I mean, it's really a simple, it's like the old movie quote, if you build it, they will come. When there's a fishery, anglers will come. And so that's what happened in the late 90s, early 2000s. We had all of these stocked fisheries peaking. The popularity of the sport also just skyrocketed. A few things we the DNR didn't necessarily know at the time was, how to create this fishery, but do you know how to maintain and sustain that population, right? Mm-hmm. And what we're finding out is a few things biologically and also, under the pressure of angling, how they built these fisheries doesn't necessarily translate to a long-term sustained fishery. So now we're looking at different methods of stocking and management in order to maintain quality fishing.
Quick editorial point. Yeah, Jack Burns used to write for Outdoor News back in the day. I don't know if you ever met Jack or if you remember him, but I remember talking to him about, if you want to go have great muskie fishing, do you go to Canada? Where do you go? And he kind of laughed. He said, go to a lot of the Minneapolis lakes and you can catch fish almost as good as you're going to catch up in Canada. That was good looking back at the heyday. But back to the stocking, it sounds like what the DNR has found is we want to start stocking bigger fish, yearling fish. Those are fish that spend an extra year in the pond growing larger because it sounds like we just get a lot better survivability of those larger stocked muskies than we do with an 8 or 10 incher, huh?
Yeah, that's right. There's a few things involved in that too. But yes, generally speaking with any fish, really, the bigger they are when you stock them, the higher their survival rate. What we're finding is a few things. The first one being that with the crazy climate that we've gotten now in the last 10 to 15 years, raising and growing quality size muskies has gotten much, much harder. Mm. And it used to be that the DNR, they always knew bigger fish were better. It used to be that a 10 inch muskie fingerling was kind of bare minimum as far as what they wanted to put in a lake. And it's really gotten to where in a lot of cases, those 10 inchers are hard to grow now. We're not consistently getting 10 inches, even much less greater than 10, where we used to be stocking 12, 13, even 14 inch fingerlings. So those fish just survived a lot better and they're not able to grow those fish consistently anymore. And then the other part of it is, there's predation. There's always predation. So that's one of the reasons why bigger is better. And the other one is just simply stress on those little fish. But with the inconsistency of growing those fish, what we're looking at is the only way to really consistently get bigger fish is to carry them over to the following year when they would be, you know, classified as yearlings. And by that point, they are going to hopefully surpass that 13, 14 inch threshold and actually survive when you put them in the lake.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. We're talking with Aaron Meyer. He's a co-chair of the state's Muskie and Pike Alliance. We're talking a little bit about Minnesota's Muskie plan, looking forward to trying to recapture the glory days of muskie fishing in our fine state. Aaron, do we have many lakes in Minnesota with natural muskie reproduction where, you know, natural spawning is contributing to the muskies in our fishery?
Yes, we do. Muskies are native to Minnesota. Most of that north central part of the state, you know, anything around Leech Lake, Cass Lake, the headwaters of the Mississippi, a lot of that stuff, that's why they call them the Mississippi strain. Mm-hmm. Realistically, anything that was directly, continuously connected to the Mississippi was native. And so for the most part, those fisheries still have native self-sustaining populations. They're not stocking them in those waters.
Now, a lot of muskie advocates felt like maybe the DNR wasn't paying as much attention to muskie management as it should have for a better part of the past 15 years. During your comments at the roundtable, you, I think, pretty strongly suggested you feel like we've turned the corner. We've got a muskie plan that's coming together here in 2025. And you sounded much more optimistic, I would say, about the outlook going forward. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, it is. It is. The whole fishery was really built on a collaboration between the anglers and the DNR. And Minnesota DNR, when they commit to something, honestly, they do a fantastic job. It did seem like, you know, for maybe a decade or so now that they'd kind of pulled away from trying to do anything positive in the muskie world when we had been telling them, in some cases since 2010, that these fisheries have been going downhill. And it just seemed like we don't expect everything to go our way. They're not sure out there just to do our bidding. But when the fishery is failing, that's their job is to try to bring that back. And it does feel like just within the last year, honestly, that we're kind of seeing a renewed commitment. They're actually coming out with goals that they've got ideas and things that they know can help if we can accomplish them moving forward.
Good. Yeah, that's definitely a step in the right direction. There were some comments about forward-facing sonar at the end of the meeting. There were a couple comments, several comments. It's definitely on the minds of muskie anglers, isn't it? This live sonar allows folks really of any skill level. You don't have to be an old school muskie angler who knows all the nuances of the species to go and find these big individual fish and catch them. That's a problem where no one seems to have a solution to just yet, do they?
No, nobody really does. We are certainly looking at it. We're having more and more conversations, trying to pull in ideas and see how you address it. It really is the elephant in the room right now. And it's certainly going to fairly quickly impact things like muskies and, in my opinion, large walleyes too. But down the road, it's going to affect all of the fish in the fisheries. It's not necessarily a problem with the technology itself. It's the implementation of it and how you use it and where you use it. And these big fish go out and spend a lot of time out suspended in open water. And we always knew they were there and we knew we could target them, but it was really a needle in a haystack type of a proposition. Mm-hmm. And this technology turns that into a neon sign in a hay field.
Yeah, exactly. And even though muskie anglers practice catch and release, even the new young guys, folks using this technology, any fish can only be handled being caught and released so many times, right?
Yeah, you know, there's not really a defined number there, but absolutely, every time you handle a fish, even if you know how to handle them properly, you're putting stress on that fish. Mm-hmm. And how many times can it go through that? And especially how many times can that happen when that fish is in what used to be their last remaining refuge, right? That open water space where they could go out and basically disappear. And now those are the easiest fish in the entire lake to find.
That's amazing. No, that's totally amazing. Well, Aaron, thanks for spending a segment with me. Thanks for being an advocate for muskie angling. If folks want to know more about muskie fishing or the Alliance, what can they do? Where can they go?
We do have a website, though we're not great at updating it and keeping it keeping it constant. We're more worried about fishing and fighting for the fish, but it is mnmuskie.org. You can also look up myself or John Underhill. We are the co-chairs. We're both on Facebook, and we do have a Muskie and Pike Alliance Facebook page as well. And in addition to that, if anybody knows people within their local Muskie Zinc chapter, those people know how to contact us.
Absolutely. And those Muskie Inc. guys, they're real helpful too. So lots of opportunities if you want to get into the sport of muskie fishing, which a lot of people have done over the past quarter century. Aaron, again, thanks for joining me. I know you can't wait for open water and that muskie season to open again, but go out and enjoy some hard water angling before that happens, huh?
Oh, yeah, will do. Thanks, Rob.
All right, you bet. Aaron Meyer from the States Muskie and Pike Alliance. We are going to grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830, Sunday, January 26th. Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. Thank you to my last guest, Aaron Meyer from the Minnesota Muskie and Pike Alliance. We touched very briefly on forward-facing sonar, and there was something I meant to bring up with Aaron that I forgot. I'll mention it now. We do an online opinion poll every week at Outdoor News, and we usually get a fair number of voters, folks who chime in on the poll. And I thought it was interesting this past week, we asked a question about forward-facing sonar. Basically, should it be regulated in some way, shape, or form? I think the first option was, no, leave it alone. The second option was, yeah, we probably should take a look at some regulation. And the third option was, I don't worry about it. I can't afford it anyway. And generally speaking, when you ask for a pitch on regulating technology, it's been my experience that most folks, they may not adamantly oppose it, but they'll generally say, I'm against regulation. The results of this survey were pretty stark. It was like 14% leave it alone, 76%, yeah, we need to consider regulating it. And I think the folks who said I can't afford it anyway was like 10%. So the vast majority of folks chiming in and saying, yeah, this is serious. We need to look at it. I definitely think there's some momentum for, at least on some individual lakes, considering some sort of regulations for forward-facing sonar. We'll be talking about that a lot more as we get closer to the open water season, I suspect. Want to transition now and talk to someone from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources about some public lands we've got now in the East Metro. I'm a big public lands advocate. Dedicated listeners to this broadcast know that about me. And something I failed to talk about very much last year when it became available, I believe this parcel opened to the public in October, is the Keystone Woods Wildlife Management Area. This is in Washington County, big chunk of property, over 1,800 acres near the metro. And that's a pretty big deal. The Department of Natural Resources has taken some public comment on how to manage that property into the future. And here to join us, talk about the property a little bit and this public review process is Kelly Ferris. Kelly is the Keystone Woods WMA coordinator. Kelly, are you out of the Forest Lake office?
I am. Office out of Carlos Avery here.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you carving out some time to talk about this. Let's talk about the property a little bit. Do I have it right? It officially opened to the public last fall. Tell us a little of the history. Was there one owner? Did the DNR piece this together from several parcels? Give us a little background.
Yeah, so Keystone Woods Wildlife Management Area was previously a cattle ranch. It was formerly owned by the Kelly Land and Cattle Company, and it was owned by them since 1958. It is one of the largest tracts of undeveloped land remaining in the Twin Cities metro area. It is located in north-central Washington County in Hugo and May Township area of the metro. It contains a variety of habitats, including hardwood forests, woodlands, rolling hills of grasslands and prairie. There's some small lakes and numerous wetlands throughout the property. It provides important habitat for game and non-game species, things like deer, waterfowl, wild turkeys, small game and pheasants, and species of reptiles, amphibians, songbirds, raptors, all the like.
Well, how far would you say it's from like downtown St. Paul? 25 minutes? Is it that close?
Yeah, probably about 30-ish, okay. Yeah, somewhere in there from downtown St. Paul.
Yeah, you were telling me off air the nearest community, probably Marine on St. Croix, that, like you say, the Hugo May Township area, probably less than 10 miles from the St. Croix River. a remarkably large contiguous parcel too. It's not like, you know, I looked at the map. It's not like one of those parcels. It's like a snake, you know, that that's all piecemealed together. You know, there's the interior of this is probably pretty remote from roadways. Will some reclamation work be required on this property? Is that already underway, or did that happen last year? What's the state of the property now? Does it look like kind of a beat up old cattle ranch, or is habitat work already underway?
Trust for Public Land purchased the property with the help of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and transferred the land to the DNR, which was finalized in the fall of 2024 and designated as a WMA. Prior to the transfer of land to the DNR, buildings and other structures were removed and such. Some fences have been removed. There was a lot of fencing out there. Some of it will remain around the perimeter, but there is still a lot more work to do, but it is open to the public, as you said. There's some parking areas available as well.
Were there any tie lines on this property? I mean, if it was livestock, typically I wouldn't think so that there would be tile lines. Tile, of course, is drainage. We see that in western Minnesota when the DNR acquires a new piece of property out there. Lots of times they'll bust up the tile lines to prevent that drainage because we want water on the landscape. We want ponds and that sort of thing. I'm just curious, was there much for tile lines to get busted up on this parcel?
Yeah, I don't believe there was any tile that was found on the property. And the wetlands, there's over 400 wetlands on the property, and they are in very good to pristine condition at this time.
So has the staff, DNR staff out of the Forest Lake office already, you know, initiated some habitat projects on the parcel, replanting prairie, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we have project planning in the works. Some restoration work is underway, and then also in the works starting this, hopefully next spring. There is a lot of planning yet to do. That it will take time to implement everything.
What is public access like right now? How can someone get into the property? Is it just from the perimeter, from parking lots along the outside of the parcel? Is there a road bisecting it? If I want to get in there and go hunting, do I put on a pair of good boots and tromp in there? Or how are people accessing the property, I guess?
Yeah, so there is temporary parking areas available. The property is located off Manning Avenue or County Road 15 in Washington County, and at the intersection of that and 170th Street North, which is also County Road 4. So there are three temporary parking areas, one on the east side of Manning off 155th Street, and then two on the west side of Manning, one just north of 155th Street. And then further north from there, there is an access to Barker Lake, there's a temporary parking area down that road partway. So park there, and then you're able to walk in and access as you want.
1,800 acres. I got to think there's, you know, some places on this property that feel fairly remote. Have you tromped around out there yourself, Kelly?
I have tromped around out there. We had to post the boundary of the WMA last fall, so I've been around most of the perimeter of it and through the woods and the grasslands, and it does feel very remote. If you drive down Manning Avenue, those rolling hills of grassland kind of stand out at you.
Excellent. You're listening to WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830, chatting with Kelly Ferris. She is the Keystone Woods WMA coordinator. We're talking about this great new piece of public lands kind of north and maybe a little east of the Twin Cities metro area. Really an incredible coup for the state of Minnesota acquiring a property of this size so close to the metro area. So there's a public input process underway right now, Kelly. What is there, I guess, to input? The DNR has the property. What are you asking the public to offer their comments on?
Yeah, so the public input process opened January 16th, so last Thursday, I guess, and it's open until March 2nd. The input opportunities include an online survey. That survey can be accessed from our Keystone Woods WMA page, or you can search on the DNR website and just put Keystone Woods in the search. That'll bring you to that. There's an online webinar from 6 to 8 p.m. on February 12th. The link to that webinar is also on that Keystone Woods page. There will also be an in-person public meeting from 6 to 8 p.m. on February 13th at the Hugo City Hall, or by emailing and calling the North Metro Wildlife staff and submitting comments there. There's been a lot of interest in this property and the use of the WMA. The public input process is kind of a formal way to collect feedback, and we're looking for input to help prioritize some of the opportunities that will be offered out at Keystone Woods, things that would align with the intent and the primary purpose of the WMA, like habitat protection, restoration enhancement, wildlife production, and opportunities for hunting, trapping, fishing, wildlife viewing, and other compatible recreational uses. There may be some things that are not compatible that, you know, people are looking for, like motorized recreation trails. But we're looking to kind of prioritize kind of where to go, where to start, and what the future will look like.
Again, you go to mndnr.gov, search Keystone Woods WMA. You can get real simple access to all the input opportunities that Kelly just mentioned. I'll throw them out here right now, however. Email northmetro.wildlife@state.mn.us, or you can call the Keystone Woods staff at 651-539-3324. Again, you're taking public comments until Sunday, March 2nd. What happens then? Can you give us a little timeline on what folks can expect to happen with all this public input?
Yeah, so like I said, we'll work through the public input process and the public meetings. Public input will help prioritize the plans for the property. Implementing it will be depending on staff time and funding and resources that are available.
Kelly, did you notice, did the property get much use this past autumn and this winter? I mean, there's still, I presume folks could still go out there and hunt squirrels or rabbits as we speak. Is the property getting some use?
Yes, it is getting a lot of use. We kind of monitored parking areas throughout the fall seasons, throughout hunting seasons. And now there's a lot of use for ice fishing and the like Barker Lake area. There's a lot of interest in getting out there and fishing as well. So I don't think I go there very often where there's not a car or two or four in any one of the parking lots. So
presumably that's going to increase as the word gets out about the availability of this incredible new piece of public land. Kelly, I got to think it's pretty gratifying working for the DNR on a project like this, seeing a new piece of public land that you can help mold and work on the habitat and see the fruits of your labor in terms of the general public enjoying it.
It is. It's a awesome piece of property. I'm just happy that, you know, it is now in public ownership and looking forward to what it looks like in the future.
Good. Well, I got to get out there and check it out myself. Well, Kelly, thanks so much for carving out some time for me. Good luck with the public input process. I got to think as public input processes go, this one's going to be pretty positive, right? Everyone's got to be pretty happy about this.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of input and feedback we get.
Well, good luck with it. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Yeah, that was Kelly Ferris, Keystone Woods WMA coordinator, telling us about a public review process going on for that new piece of public land. Again, if you want to get involved, go to mndnr.gov and just search Keystone Woods WMA. With that, I'm going to grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830, final segment of this week's broadcast on this Sunday, January 26th. I'm Rob Dreisline. Thank you for tuning in. I guess we are just wrapping up the first full week of the second Trump administration. A lot has already happened. Some public lands things, mostly affecting Alaska. I'll probably hold off on commenting on some of that till we maybe get a little better handle of some bigger picture conservation and public land issues. One item that I see Dennis Anderson of the Star Tribune wrote about this weekend is suggesting that wolves are more likely to be delisted under a Trump administration. I think maybe the more important component of that is the Republican Congress perhaps will be more friendly toward pushing through wolf delisting. We've had multiple administrations, just about every administration, Democrat and Republican alike, has advocated for wolf delisting in this part of the world, you know, where we've got stable and even growing wolf populations. Multiple administrations representing both parties have said, yeah, it's time to delist the species. The Endangered Species Act has worked. What has happened is it's gotten bogged down either in Congress or usually the courts. I believe that's what stopped delisting in this part of the world the last time around was a judge out in California, I believe, and that's where it sits. So we'll see if Dennis is perhaps correct on that. The only action Trump did that I will comment on was this executive order switching the name of Denali in central Alaska, the largest mountain in North America, And I believe the mountain that has the most vertical relief of any rock in the world, changing Denali to Mount McKinley. I know it won't be popular in Alaska. I've talked about this before. Even, you know, Republican senators up there are against it. I know people in Alaska. I visited Alaska. And anytime I called it Mount McKinley, Alaskans corrected me and said, no, it's Denali. So I don't think it's going to be real popular up there. I guess my overreaching point was, who is demanding this? Why is this necessary? It just Trump because he likes McKinley because McKinley was a pro-tariff guy? Is that the long and short of it? It just seems like an unnecessary controversy that's going to require reprinting maps and reprinting signage and those sorts of things. But I guess that's where we are here in 2025. Before I go, I've got a story that'll bring it back to Minnesota. Marshall Helmberger's newspaper up there in Ely, the Timber Jay, had a story talking about, you might recall last year, the Superior National Forest declared that folks in the boundary waters, all overnight campers, had to use bear-proof food containers or hang their food. Most people I know were already doing that, but I guess there were a fair number who were not, and that was creating some problems with bears up there. So Marshall reports that in a year when there were limited natural foods that resulted in a pretty sharp increase in bear nuisance reports across northern Minnesota, those complaints were actually down in the boundary waters. Fewer than 10 such reports were recorded last year, just a fraction of the average of 40 to 50 reports experienced over the previous 4 years. So that's good news. Nice job, everybody, who followed the rules in the boundary waters last year. Let's keep it going in 2025. With that, I'm out of time, folks. Everybody have a great week out of doors. Rob Dreisland signing off for WCCO Outdoors.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.